Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello. This is your spoiler warning. If you haven't seen Executive Decision, then don't listen to this podcast if you want to watch Executive Decision. If you haven't seen a 90s thriller or action film, don't listen to this podcast if you want to, because it gives away the plot of every 90s action film ever made. So, don't say we didn't warn you. Spoiler warning.
Peace. I hate the word.
Hello and welcome to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, a podcast where two fucking idiots watch every movie with the every TV series, every game, every mobile game, every short film, every Funny or Die clip that they can get their grubby little hands on, starring the viciously underrated leading man.
Yes.
Who has been put in the category of character actor for no reason other than lots of reasons that it's too big to go into here on a comedy podcast. It's racism. Anyway, he should be getting $20 million a film, but he's not because of racism. Anyway, this is a comedy podcast. We don't tackle those big themes here. My name is Zachary Rowane. Oh, it's John Leguizamo. The worst introduction I've ever done.
No, I love it. You're so mad.
It's bad. He should be.
It's ridiculous. I just like that if you say the statement but then laugh hysterically afterwards, it's comedy and it's fine.
No, I just don't know where to go from there. Like, we do that. The introduction is, I'm Zach, this is Mish, you know, I'm Dani Donna, she's my friend, and John Leguizamo. The point I'm trying to say is, the reason I'm laughing is this is a funny comedy podcast. It's light. It's frivolous. It's like, hey, our favorite actor. And then just as we've gone on, it's become this harder and harder to not talk about thing that is like, it's clearly
every week. Every week I stop myself from being like, Hollywood is whitewashed to the shit. And this is fucked. This is fucked.
Sorry, we're just being social justice warriors here.
After I saw The Take, so that would be like, I don't know, four episodes ago or something, I was mad because that movie was so good. There's this movie, Dave. You probably haven't heard of it because Hollywood's fucked, but it's called The Take and he's the lead and he's amazing. And it is directed by the same guy as The Lincoln Lawyer. And it is as good as The Lincoln Lawyer. 100%.
100%.
And the only reason that it wasn't as successful as The Lincoln Lawyer is for all the shit that Zach said at the start, and then we all laughed after because we don't know how to address it.
Do we want to start again?
Sorry, no.
No?
I like this.
Okay, fuck it. Fuck you, Hollywood. Yeah. Fuck you.
I'm not going to get there. If you don't say it, it's fine.
Oh, no. I love you, Hollywood, but please give John Leguizamo leading parts. We are joined, not as always, by a guest, Dave Warnocky. You're part of Do Go On. You're a comedian, and also Book Cheats, a podcast we were on this week.
This week?
Yeah. Thank you for being here, Dave.
Thank you for having me. One thing you missed out, one of my credits is I am a big-time Hollywood producer. So you guys
fucked.
I accused you of racism.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Oh, no, we're going to be shunned.
It's all true, but I'll shun you anyway. We've got to bury that shit.
Dave, hello.
Hello, great to be here.
Great to have you here.
You've been on Recaps with Mission Zach? Or have we never had you as a guest?
No, I don't think so, no.
We've been on Book Cheats a couple of times.
That's right.
I don't know why Dave keeps asking us back to do that. I
think it's great fun.
The last one we did with you went for like 3 hours.
It was an epic.
Yeah, Zach and I can't shut the fuck up.
I think it's one of those things where like you're meant to let him talk. So do you want to tell the audience about this? We have no audience.
Hello, audience.
But do you want to tell them about Book Cheats?
Well, basically, it's a book club podcast, but I've read the book, so the guests and the people at home don't have to. So pick a classic, like a Charles Dickens or like a Jane Austen or something, and I read it. I do my own little summary, and then I tell two guests about it, so we don't have to bother reading.
Now, every time I've done this podcast, I've finished up, and I've called Mish, and I've gone, I think we're a bit too rude, because like you'll get half a set, you'll be like, so Albert Camus, and we're like, Albert Camus.
No, that's what the show is. It would be nothing if it was just me reading out like a summary. That would be so dull. And I remember last time you were on before this one, we did an Oscar Wilde play, I believe, The Importance of Being Earnest.
Yes. Yes.
And I was like, I hadn't read a book in time, so I was like, I'll just do a short one. It'll be a play. We'll get it done. Or well, it'll be like a 50-minute podcast or something. Yeah. Oh, it was an epic.
Egg is on your face.
I know.
Yeah, and it's always like, it's always, because you do plays with us usually.
That's right, because you are theatre types.
Week, yeah. But we're theatre types. We've done the theatre. But it's always really dark because, like, we're like, ah, ha, 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 and we're, like, making jokes. And we're like, I remember when I was in second year university, I did a scene from this play. And we're like, oh, this is, dear boy, this is how you do acting. And then you're like, and then we get, like, 50 minutes in and I'm thinking, wow, this is going really well. And you're like, and then we get to act two or four. And I'm like, oh, no, this is all my fault.
That if you go, if anyone who's listening to this, all three listeners, if you go and listen to Book Cheats episode, The Importance of Being Earnest, starring me and Zach and Dave, obviously, it is a perfect example of what happens when you ask theatre types to talk about being theatre types. It's the most self-indulgent.
Oh, my God.
But it's great. You get that insight and also that slight bitterness about how the industry is, which I enjoy as well. You're talking about no one else knows that sort of stuff, so I enjoy that.
Actors love actors are the only artisans or craftspeople in all the world that have decided that their craft is the art itself. So, like, if you're a carpenter, your art is like making is the fucking cupboards. I don't know. If you're a stonemason, your art is the stone. If you're a painter, your art is the painting. Actors are the only artists where, like, if you're a director, your art is the film that you make. If you're a writer, the art is the film that you wrote. If you're an actor, the art is acting, my dear. So actors love acting more than the thing they're acting for. They're like, see, the thing about this play is it's an opportunity for me to be on stage acting. And the thing about acting is it is a window to the soul.
I hate us. I hate us so much.
I hate actors. I really
hate actors.
Do.
Yeah, we're awful people. I hate theatre types. But then what'll happen is I'll go and see a really lovely little independent show and I'll really feel something. I'm like, oh, she's still got it. Like, it's still there. I still want to talk about it and all my feelings.
Thank you so much for doing this. You're also of note because you're the first. We've been wanting to have you on for a while. I thought we'd had you on to recap, so I feel a little bad about that.
No, that's fine. I'm a fan of recaps.
Yeah, for what it's worth, you didn't miss much by not being on recaps.
We feel bad asking guests. It's always like this whole thing of building up because it's like, I feel bad. You've got it worked out with your Book Cheats thing, but I feel bad like, can you watch this 2-hour thing is always like a bit of a...
Yeah, you give the guest homework.
Would... I've been a guest on Do Go On and I have to write a... had to write a report for
That's
you.
Right. And you... Obviously, we get people to come and do a report, but we try and get them to do a topic you're at least passionate about, which you did with Disneyland.
Yes.
Because otherwise it's literally asking you to do like a book report or some sort of university essay or something.
My problem was I picked something I was too passionate about and like I think I spent the entire time, like my intro was 2 hours. I'm like, let me set the scene. And then it was 2 hours later. I'm like, oh, there was a bread ride about bread.
I have something to say about that episode. When I found out that Zach done an episode of because I'm a big Do Go On fan. It's very, very good driving to work podcast listening. Love
Thank
it.
You.
When I found out Zach's episode was on, I put it on and it was, this is not a joke. I didn't get through the entire introduction. It took me 3 days of driving to work until Zach had finished his intro. I was stuck in traffic, peak hour traffic for 3 days listening to Zach be like, yeah, so anyway, 1942.
I really, really like theme parks. And people ask me, they're like, are you ever going to do a podcast about theme parks? And if you want to know why I'm not going to ever do a podcast about theme parks, listen to the episode I did of Do Go On, because it's too much. It's too much. I get overwhelmed. I'm like a 10-year-old boy. I'm like, and then there was a car park, and they thought, well, that can't be a car park anymore. We're going to make it into a theme park.
I have a genuine question for you, Dave, about the podcast, about Do Go On. How do you decide what topics you're going to do? Are we allowed to ask about that?
Yeah, well, thankfully, it's a double-edged sword. I like – so 2 out of the 3 weeks, there's 3 hosts, me, Matt, and Jess. And we take it in turns. We do it in little cycles of people –
Sorry, just to interject. Jess Perkins, that's of Kick-Ass 2 fame.
We all know. So sometimes they're voted for by people on Patreon. And you got to – the great thing about that is they decide, so you don't have to make a choice. But you also then have to find 3 or 4 options that you'd be willing to talk about if they chose – because they always choose the one that you're like, oh, there's 2 good topics here. I'll put a 3rd one in history. Here we've got PinoClean wipes. We'll put that in there for a bit of padding, and then that'll get 85% of the vote. Shit. So, but a lot of the time they are suggested by people, but there, I think there's, at last count, 9,000 suggestions in a little Google form. So
oh my
it
God.
Is sometimes hours of wading through looking for suggestions. And
That's
sometimes
crazy.
One you just be like, yeah, do a report on Dave's butt. Yeah. All right, I'll put that up for the
so
vote.
You haven't done that one yet?
85% of the vote. Unbelievable.
No, we just pick one of the John Leguizamo movies.
It really, the way we pick is very, very professional. We call each other on a Thursday and say, are you having a good day or a bad day? I'm having a good day. Okay, you want to watch a comedy? I'm having a bad day. All right, let's watch an early 90s drama. That's how Zach and I decide.
9 times out of 10, Mish will be like, what do you want to watch? And I go, is there anything left that's less than 90 minutes? she never lets me watch Spawn.
Because if it was up to Zach, we'd just watch Spawn every week. So we're saving it.
I feel the same with Book Cheat, though. Like, I think I've read every novella. All the really famous plays from the 20th century. Like,
do you have a favourite?
I'm ticking off Shakespeare's as well. You know, they're getting less and less left to go. Favourite.
Do you have a favourite book that you've read?
I loved Of Mice and Men. Short and a good story.
Oh, it's good.
What a combo.
It's really good.
I feel you on that, man. Books are long.
Yeah, sometimes. Oh, my goodness.
That's like a proper commitment.
How do you choose your books?
They are also suggested, but then sometimes it does come down to how much time have I got left?
Yeah, we feel that.
Yeah. On Thursday night, I call myself and how are you feeling?
I'm feeling a short play today.
Mish keeps being like, we should watch the entirety of season 10 of this.
What do you mean I keep? We've literally committed to doing it. So he's been in a couple of, mate, Johnny Legs, has been in a couple of TV
like
shows.
Season long.
Oh, like, right. He's in 2 seasons of Bloodline. He's in like 2.5 seasons of ER, something like that.
And do you feel like with those episodes, you'd watch the entire 2.5
We're in two minds because it's like, what do you want to, where do you want the pain to be? Because if you split up an entire season of a show into like 10 episodes, like episode 1, then this project, this concept goes for another year.
Yeah.
But if you do a series, then that means you have to watch like 10 hours between podcast recordings.
I'm ready, though. I was made redundant, so I'm currently...
Oh, sorry to hear that.
No, it's great, because I can now commit to sitting down and watching 3 seasons of ER in 2 days. Piss easy.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So we ask all new guests about this. Mm-hmm. As you know, this podcast is about John Leguizamo.
Yes.
What is your relationship with John Leguizamo?
Okay, so cards on the table. When you both told me that you were doing, you're about to launch this podcast, mm-hmm. I, by name, like I imagine a few people didn't know who John Leguizamo mm-hmm. was. Mm-hmm. As soon as I saw the face, I was like, of course, that guy.
That's what he is in Australia. Mm, that he's the,
Yeah, and then I think the about, he's in these movies, and and he's good in those movies too.
Yeah, he's the best.
My other relationship is sometimes people tell me that I look like him.
No.
Not the actor, but his character in Ice Age.
Oh, stop it.
That's the funniest thing you've ever said.
Like, more than a few times.
But the way you phrased
that is good. You're good at that.
Oh my god. That was the biggest. Like, if you're a listener, that's and you're only a listener. You don't have any visual mediums. That the journey of what they pictured in their mind.
So good. Oh, okay.
Like
Latino Australian. Yeah.
Oh.
Very
good.
Oh. So, you don't look like Sid the Sloth. You look like Tybalt. You look like him in Romeo and Juliet.
Thank you.
Handsome, slick, little
tight,
twinkish.
Tight little tank top. Your little pectoral.
What an outfit.
And we will say this. When we were launching the pod, like I don't think we'd even really properly recorded any episodes yet. We talked to Dave about it and he had said, if you ever have me on this podcast, because no, we said that we wanted to have you on because we didn't have you for recaps. We really wanted to have you on this pod. And he was like, well, if you have me on, I want to do executive decision.
Well, yes, because this is what I was going to say is usually we ask people to come on and watch a movie and it's a bit of a beast of a thing to do. You messaged me and you probably and just said, yo, I think you were watching it in real time. Yeah. You're like, I'm watching a movie called Executive Decision and John Leguizamo just came on screen. And it was like, well, then, yeah, you do that one then.
You're coming for this one. You've already watched it. Willingly. We're not going to lose a friend.
I've been building up the confidence to ask you to watch a two-hour movie against your will. And then you've just come and said, I've already watched it. It's like, well, then do that one then.
And I love it. It's a great movie.
I'm really, really excited to talk about this film.
Do you want to rip into the blurb?
Oh, I do.
So we do a little blurb, but it's not the whole podcast. It's just a little thing that Mish has written.
A bit of what it's about and then what Johnny had to do.
I think this was your idea. I think this was you. I called you when we first started this concept and I said, got any advice? And your advice was two little collab-y things where you come on each other's podcasts one week.
Which we're doing.
The other piece of advice you gave was like, maybe just do a little description before you get into it.
Can I just say, if you hadn't given us that advice, truthfully, Zach and I would just be coming on here just being like, no, there would be no structure.
Just like, hey.
This is the only part of the podcast that has any form of structure, by the way.
Anything that gives it a sense of continuity.
Then we get to the end of that. They didn't even say the words executive decision in that 2 hour book.
Truthfully.
And truth be told, there have been podcasts, even with the description, that's the only thing.
I'm going to bring it up again. We did an episode a while back now on a music video called Somos Anormales where we just did not talk about it until the last 3 minutes of the podcast and people got mad. And I've never forgotten.
And never forgiven either. I it was really me that was driving. I will say it was in the Zoom era. It was in the Zoom era of podcasts where, like,
we all lost our minds a little bit.
Oh, yeah, we were losing our fucking minds.
I'm listening to a US, so we're in a room together right now. I listened to a podcast called Podcast The Ride, which is a bit of an influence on this podcast because they'll go for an hour and a half and not get to the ride for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But every podcast they talk about a a different theme park ride. Very Zach.
very Zach.
And they were doing that episode the other day in the US. They're still doing it over Zoom. And they were like, they were calling it the Zoom era. And
they were saying, so funny.
They were like, they were talking about how they were like, there's a couple of really good rides they want to talk about. They're like, we don't want to fucking waste it on this Zoom stuff. So, you know, it's like, oh, I've been there, baby. I remember those days.
Okay. Right. I'm going to be reading the blurb today.
Okay. I can't wait.
It's going to be good.
Here we go.
The 1996 action thriller Executive Decision is about a whole bunch of different men who at all different parts of the film make executive decisions. Some of them are really good. Some of them just seem really fucking dumb. At one point, you might think that Halle Berry makes an executive decision, but mostly it's just her listening to men telling her what to do when they are making executive decisions. When terrorists take over a plane with a big, intricate bomb inside it, Kurt Russell, Steven Seagal, and a whole bunch of sidekicks from the 90s movies enter the plane while it's flying to save the day. It's a movie full of action, drama, and the results of some very poor security screening at airports.
Oh my god.
The bomb is so big.
It's so big.
They have huge guns.
Yeah, they get the machine guns on the plane. Yeah.
The bomb literally takes up half of the undercarriage.
Yeah, it's like a box that you'd have, like, if you had like a stuffed elephant or something. It's so big.
It's essentially a coffin. Like, it's huge. John Leguizamo plays Rat, a stealthy military man. 100% of everything he says in this movie is a witty quip.
Oh, his lines are awesome.
They're so good. So, discuss, please.
I want to launch where you mentioned executive decision. Mm. I have to say, this movie has the, I think, I loved it, firstly.
Yep.
Loved it.
Great.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'll talk about all the reasons why soon. But I have to say it has the worst example of a title being said in the movie. You know how titles are said in the movie?
Yes, yeah.
Because what happens is they're traveling along, they're going along, and then the Secretary of State is like, God, we got to call the president. Like, towards the end, he's like, we got to call the president because the plan is going awry. He's like, we got to call the president. Mm. And I think the president has to make an executive decision.
Yeah. He turns to the camera.
And he goes, and I was like, and the reason why I think it's the worst example ever is usually those moments when the title is said, it's like, oh, it all comes together. It's like this entire time we've been building to this moment. Mm. But that is him going, no. The way things have been going, the entire plot doesn't work. It's not working. What we need to do instead is an executive decision. It's like demonstrating that this movie is not about executive decision of the president.
Well, see, I reckon what happened was whoever wrote this movie went, executive decision is a fucking sick title.
Oh, yeah.
That is a sick title. Okay, well, we just have to make sure that this incredible plot line that we have, as long as it relates back to the title, it's like they were separate things.
Yes.
So then throughout the movie, they just kept going, oh, we'll just make him make it an executive decision right now. Oh, okay, just quickly, we'll make him make another executive decision. Like, the whole movie is based around a series of small executive decisions.
What is the definition of an executive decision?
We both looked at Dave. Dave?
An executive decision. So I think it's like taking charge, being like, well,
I'm making an executive decision.
Yeah, exactly. I outrank you all. I'm choosing that we do this. And you can't say no. Because I'm in charge.
Yeah.
It's
like if other people want to do something else because you're the big boss or you make the choices and you trump theirs.
You're actually not wrong. There are a lot of executive decisions in this film.
So many.
The one executive decision that has no impact in the film is the executive decision referenced in the film.
Exactly.
When he says it's time for an executive decision, that's the one executive decision that has nothing to do with the plot or the final act.
Yeah. Do you know what I also didn't understand?
Oh, yes, please.
You know how the start of the movie,
mm-hmm.
they're like raiding this house, these military men. They're running into this house. Yeah. What's that got to do with any of the film?
That we're looking for the
gas.
Gas.
Oh, but
they got there too late, and that gas ended up being in the plane as the bomb.
Oh, 3 months later.
Yeah, months later. That's why Steven Seagal and Kurt Russell have a bit of a thing, because Kurt Russell's the scientist who had the intel that was supposed to be there, and he thinks that Steven Seagal was late. Mm. But Steven Seagal says, no, that information was outdated. You sent us in, and I lost one of my men on that mission.
Steven Seagal was not happy.
Yeah. The lines on his forehead were very much on display. Yeah.
He was really disappointed that he didn't get to make the executive decision.
He wanted to make the exec. But he made
a big decision.
Can I talk?
Oh, he made one of the big ones.
Oh, yeah, big one.
He's a real, like, what a twist. I got to say, the sort of psycho style, you know, you think this is going to be a story about Seagal and Kurt Russell.
Yeah, because at the time, he's a big deal in this era.
Yeah.
He's like a famous action star.
Yes. And it's a bit of a psycho twist, because you're traveling along, you think this is going to be all about Seagal. And then he dies.
Yeah, and like Dave said, he was a big hitter. So a lot of people would have gone to this movie thinking it was a Steven Seagal movie.
I think, if you look at the credits, it's like Kurt Russell is number one bill, and then Steven Seagal. So he's the big action guy in the movie.
Imagine being like a giant Steven Seagal fan in the mid-90s and going to the movies.
Imagine being a giant Steven Seagal fan.
You're in the cinema yelling, no, Steven!
Yeah, you're like, no!
No!
Because, so we've already done the spoiler alert, so I don't need to be like, rhymes with mauling out of a mane. Like, he dies. He falls out of a plane. He gets sucked out of a plane.
He gets sucked out of, and they're obsessed with the device that they kept calling a sleeve.
Yeah.
Too many times. Sleeve is in place. All right. We're going to lose the sleeve. It just felt weird that they said sleeve so many times to me.
So I should explain this concept, right? Because I think this is for me the best part of the entire film.
It's delicious. Please tell me all about it.
Basically, what happens is back in the 90s, it was fun to make movies about terrorists. and some terrorists, one of which we'll get into this, is played by David Suchet.
Oh, can I just say? So, I don't know if you guys don't know this, but your favourite actor is John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
My favourite actor is David Suchet.
Did you do the same thing as me? Because he's in it for a flash at the start where you went, is that David Suchet?
What? What?
Because I was like, that if I had done my description of the movie, you know, like, I didn't know if it was my week to do a description or not, and I was going to open like, get ready for a movie that will make you say, is that David Suchet?
I love him. Huge Poirot fan. And seeing him out of that character in this new context, it was very jarring. Yeah, no mustache.
No mustache. Like,
this will come as no surprise, but my experience with David Suchet is from a 1998 sexy thriller called A Perfect Murder.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I've never seen Poirot. So
was he sexy in that, or was he not?
No,
he wasn't
sexy, no.
But he plays...
I mean, of course he was, but no, he wasn't.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, but sorry.
Thank you
I'm
very
so
much.
Sorry. The looks I just got, damn.
So Hercule Poirot is a terrorist, and he takes an aeroplane by somehow sneaking on a massive bomb and giant...
Huge bomb. Sorry to keep
huge bomb.
Huge. This so isn't big. like a bowling ball. We're talking huge.
And also machine guns.
There's like six or seven machine guns.
Oh, big boys, big guns.
And they've taken over the aeroplane, and they're in the aeroplane, and then they've taken it, right? And then they go, and then everyone on the ground. Kurt Russell is a terrorism expert. He works for a think tank. Steven Seagal, he's a no-nonsense, army, SEALs.
Commando
kind of guy. Leguizamo and a cavalcade of other equally underrated actors are his, men.
Yeah.
But they're on the ground.
That guy from Terminator 2.
And he's also from Father of the Bride. BD Wong pays Martin Short's assistant.
There you go. Father of the Bride. And they're on the ground, but the bad guys are in the plane. And what happens is, I believe, a trope that is my... I didn't realize it was a trope. I thought it had happened a couple of times.
Yeah.
But it's a trope I've now realized because of this movie, of 90s movies, of the bad guys are there in this high concept situation. Mm. The good guys are here. We need to get the good guys into the place with the bad guys.
Yeah.
And then they go, how are we going to get in the plane? Well, lucky Steven Seagal knows Oliver Platt, who is a dude who has a a spaceship, and that and that spaceship is, they've never done it for real, but that spaceship can connect to other shit, moving object, and then you can climb with a pressurized
sleeve.
You climb up the sleeve, and then you can get into the plane. They've never done it before, but my God, Oliver Platt.
Yeah, it's Oliver Platt.
And thinks he can do it, but then Steven Seagal's like, Oliver Platt, you got to get him first. He's like, why? He's like, just cause, and then it all goes bad. But I want to talk specifically about that concept, the idea of. It reminded me, have you seen Daybreak?
No.
Is that, I think that's the name of the movie, the one with Sly Stallone, where it's people are in a underground tunnel.
The tunnel. Yes, I have seen that. Oh, it's all coming back. Oh,
so
very good.
Every time I'm in a tunnel, I think of this movie. Yeah. I tell my partner about this movie. I go, oh my God, I'm in a tunnel, like the movie Daybreak. Basically what happens is there's an earthquake either side of the tunnel, or a terrorist incident, I can't remember. Either side of the tunnel collapses and everyone's trapped in this like
oh, I want to watch this so
underground
bad.
Underground tunnel. But they're like, we got to get them out. But the only way to get them out is to send someone in. So Sly Stallone has to jump through like giant fans, but they can only stop the fans for like 10 seconds at a time. Or else the oxygen to the tunnel will stop.
Great concept. Right. So, I'm in. I love that.
So then the idea is it's a situation where he can get into the tunnel. No one else can get into the tunnel. And once he's in the tunnel, he can't get out of the tunnel. And then once he's in the tunnel, he has to work it out. Speed has a similar situation.
The Rock? With Nicolas Cage, because they've got to break in with the specialist knowledge of Sean Connery, who once broke out.
Yes.
Once they're in, that's it.
Once you're in, you're in. The same thing happened with Speed, same thing happened with this film. It's this concept of, all right, rather than just have the good guy in the situation, the good guy has to get into the situation in such a way that no one else can then copy it, go in with them, and they can't get back out. And this one has one of the ultimates with this spaceship sleeve.
This scene in this movie with the spaceship sleeve and the bread clip that stops the alarm.
Oh, what, that little it's plastic thing that you clip on.
There's an alarm that starts to go off when the sleeve gets attached in the main cockpit that says, like, oh, pressure is being released. So Steven Seagal goes, take this, and gives one of his men a bread clip, who then clips it to a little thing, and they went, oh, it's all fixed. Then the bread clip falls. Of course it does, because it's a fucking bread clip.
Yeah, what?
It's so anyway, this scene is one of the greatest scenes in cinema history.
I loved it.
It was
great movie.
It's
great
perfect. Scene. It's perfect. So basically they're climbing up to the other plane. Then, of course, like, everything starts to get fucked up and there's, like, only a couple of them up there. And Steven Seagal starts to, like, clamber up and he's like, I'm going to get in. And they're like, oh, no, you can't, because this other guy's passed out and I can't get in. You've got 3 seconds or else everyone's going to die. And then Steven Seagal says something. I don't even
know. Oh, what a great line.
What was the line?
He says, we're not going to make it. And Steven Seagal says, you are.
Yeah,
and
then closes it.
And then
you see this incredible shot of a man just falling through the sky.
He just gets sucked out of the top of this.
Because I thought, all right, he'll get back into this little spaceship aeroplane and then, like, it'll be him on the ground, them above, and they'll meet up in the middle. But no, he dies.
He's
gone.
All I wanted more than anything was in the final scene. So now we're cutting all the way to the end. But the last scene where everyone's out of the plane, they're all just milling about. And, like, some of them have scratches and stuff because, surprise, surprise, most of them survive. All I wanted was from, like, across the tarmac, Steven Seagal with, like, a cast on his leg. like limping forward. It's like, well done, guy. Like, he survived. Because, see, if anyone was going to, or it would be Steven Seagal.
He just parachutes in the last scene. He's been in the air the whole time. The world's longest descent.
Okay, there is another thing I really, really want to talk about, which is so good. Okay, so Halle Berry plays a flight attendant.
Yeah.
And as soon as the terrorists, like, as soon as the plane's up in the air, the terrorists rip off their, like, civilian clothes and they're, like, carrying giant guns.
Oh, that's David Suchet's got, like, this incredible beard sort of get-up type thing.
Yeah.
Goes into the toilet, takes it off, no one's panicking like, hang on, didn't you go in there with a beard? Like,
yeah.
Because there's a few seconds before that and him announcing that he's a terrorist.
Yeah.
You'd think that someone would be like, like someone who'd been lining up for the toilet or something would be like, sorry, what?
Yeah, fucked. So as soon as they're revealed as being terrorists because they're screaming stuff like, this is a terrorist attack, like running around with guns. Halle Berry, all the other flight attendants are kind of sitting and cowering and they're scared. Halle Berry does something that pisses off the terrorists by, like, hiding a sheet of the names of the people who are on the plane. She hides it. And and David Suchet's like, where's that list? And she's like, oh, well, I destroyed it. Ha, ha, ha. Like, real, like, yes, Halle, like, you stand up for yourself in that small enclosed area you can't get out of. Go for it. And he gets pissed off with her and he makes her sit down. And then 5 minutes later, he's like, right, I need a flight attendant to do something for me. I need to trust. And he chooses the one who deceived him. And he goes up to Halle Berry and he's like, you are going to do a whole bunch of tasks that involve you being by yourself multiple times in the film. And don't you disappoint me again. Then she proceeds to do a bunch of stuff that pisses him off.
It's super sus.
And yet
sus.
When she's like, well, I need to hand out some drinks to the passengers. He's like, all right. Yep, okay, that's fine.
I'm a terrorist. Yeah. My plan is to blow up this aeroplane with everyone on it, but you're absolutely right.
They're thirsty.
Get them some water that's and
right.
snacks.
That's right. Who wants a ginger beer?
I do love that as well. There is a moment where she says to him, she's like, look, if your men need, he's like, get my men some food. And she's like, if your men need some food, the customers need some water. He's like, all right, water and chips. And then, like that is the moment that then gives her permission. So she just, like, everyone's in a terrorist situation, yeah. But she's just walking around handing out newspapers.
Magazines. At one point she's like, here, have a read. And people are accepting it, saying, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, I've already read this one.
Yeah.
There's one point where there's a movie playing and people are just watching the movie.
And that was something very odd. So when it was, like, revealed, giant guns, everyone starts screaming. They're panicking. They're, like, running around the plane and then God. Everyone sits down. And then half an hour later, they're all just a little bit miffed to be on a flight still. Like, they look about as angry as anyone who's done a long haul flight.
Oh, they're already annoyed. I was watching that movie. All right, put it back on. It's like some action movie.
I also want to talk a little bit about the twist that we mentioned that Steven Seagal dies early in this movie. I love
About a third of the way through the movie.
What did I say?
No. I'm just confirming with everyone.
Yeah. It's very much like Psycho. You think he's in the opening scene. You think it's going to be Seagal's movie, right? Structurally, that's the idea.
It's very Sean Bean in Game of Thrones.
Wee, wee, wee. Spoiler alert for Hurt Locker. Also very, very Guy Pearce in The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
Real spoiler alert there.
Yeah, wow.
Sorry.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, neither
no
have I.
One's seen The Hurt Locker, and I kind of spoiled it.
I spoiled Dexter for you about 12 years ago.
Tom, before I say Guy Pearce, can you just, like, put in a little wee like, I'm going to do the sound now. Just put this in before I say Guy Pearce. Wee wee wee. Spoiler alert for Hurt Locker. Can you just take that, put some sirens under it, put it before I even mention Guy Pearce?
But then also keep it in right now.
Keep it in now. That's
so
keep
funny.
All of this in, but just take that clip of me saying spoiler alert for the Hurt Locker. Oh. Put it before. We're so sorry, Tom.
Also, Tom, and just because, Tom, now that you're listening and you're having to edit, just for the fun of it, put a little funny sound effect right now. Just a little funny one. Thank
we
you, Tom.
Keep him on his toes. We
so
do.
About for every four episodes where he, like, we literally, like, just put the intro in, we're not editing, we can't be bothered, we give him one like this.
It's just
and
so
he's just
complicated.
Here at the studio till midnight, just like you can't. Anyway, so you were saying Steven Seagal dies a third of the way through.
So, but basically, like, in all of those films, when that happens, when you kill the main character, you're only left with character actors. You're only left with actors that aren't big celebrities. The point of that twist is the person on the poster is dead. What kind of world is this? What I love about this movie is it's like, oh, my God, Steven Seagal is dead. The only person on that plane now is a big nerd played by Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Will Kurt Russell be able to save this day now?
At all.
That's Hollywood execs being like, well, I mean, obviously we want the audience to know that there's someone who can save the day, so we can't have an actual Poindexter on there.
Yeah. And it's like, and he's this big nerd with his top buttoned up and some glasses, and at one point his glasses fall down a chute, and it's like, oh, I'm a glass. Like, you're fine, Kurt Russell.
And to the point where they, later on when they're about to confront the terrorists, they don't have enough people because, you know, they've lost Steven Seagal, one of them's been incapacitated, he's got a broken neck. And they're like, we need another gun. And Kurt Russell pauses for 2 seconds and then goes, what do you need me to do? Like, he's already an action hero.
Kurt Russell, I think, is a better action star than Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell, it's like...
like, if there were to fight in a normal movie, Kurt Russell would win.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, my God, it's just Kurt. We've only got Kurt Russell now.
So can we please talk about the detonating the bomb scene?
Oh, we can talk about the whole movie. I love this movie.
Oh, it's so good.
Great film.
It's so good. So as we said, there's this big-ass fucking bomb that made its way onto the plane. Mm-hmm. So firstly, it's an incredibly delicate bomb. Mm-hmm. So if it gets knocked even slightly the wrong way, it goes off. But somehow it managed to be put on a plane.
That's right. Baggage handlers. Yeah. It just had about 80 fragile stickers on it.
Yeah.
Seriously, guys, this is fragile. No, I'm not mucking around. This is fragile. But somehow they didn't knock it around.
Yeah, didn't knock it around. Because once they... So firstly, they open up this giant suitcase to see the bomb. And the guy who's been incapacitated because he's broken his neck, he literally can't move. He's the bomb expert. So he has to use a little mirror to have a look at it while Oliver Platt does the things that he tells him to do, this bomb. And they spend all this time on this bomb only to discover that that top layer of bomb was a fake bomb.
Oh, no.
And that the real bomb is just if you lift it up, if you just lift up that top layer of just plastic, there's this really futuristic looking bomb. And it's like, oh, we're fucked. And then the so basically if these two little metal things hit each other, this plane is going to explode. But not just the plane. Apparently it can take out the whole of the east part of the United States.
The east coast of America.
Yes.
Yeah. That big.
It's huge.
And there's that much gas.
Yeah. So, like, lots of fragile stickers, like you said. And they've got to try and, like, work their way through it. But there's little laser beams. If you touch one of the little laser beams, it is the most intricate bomb on the planet. And Oliver Platt, this is Oliver Platt from Dr. Dolittle 2, by the way, so he's done 2 movies with John Leguizamo, saves the day with a lollipop stick.
Because he's been sucking on it like the whole movie.
Yeah, and and the funniest thing is, of course it was going to be that, because from the start of the movie they reference it.
He doesn't just have a little lollipop stick in his mouth. He takes it out of his little cup of lollipop sticks.
Yeah.
And then there's a point where Kurt Russell goes, God, he's like, what am I going to do? Oh, I'm just a big old nerd. What am I going to do with this bomb? He's like, if you have any problems, just use your magic wand.
Then takes the stick out of Oliver Platt's mouth, holds it up to the camera, waves it about a bit, and then gives it back just in case anyone listening is a big dumb fuck.
This movie is the ultimate in, like, in plant, like, it just... Like, coming up with, like, the writer, I think the writer was, like, writing it, and then they were like, oh, that's a great idea, but like, but that kind of comes out of nowhere. I know what I'll do. Mm. I'll go back and, using a pen, just rewrite a couple of things. Like, there's a bit where it's like, we're just, and, like, for no reason whatsoever, we have the, like, for no link to his character, no link to his work, we just open with Kurt Russell getting a plane lesson.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, well, look, you're very inexperienced, but you're pretty good at flying a plane. Anyway, off you go to your counterterrorism think tank.
And then at the end, shock horror, he has to land a plane. And they're like, but who's going to land the plane? And Kurt Russell's like, I think I can do this because of that lesson I took at the start of the film.
It's literally just a lesson that has nothing. Anyway, thanks for the flying lesson, gentlemen, sir. I'm off to be a counterterrorism expert now. Oh, and by the way, Oliver Platt, good lollipop stick. What the heck is the point of that? So what drew you to this movie, Dave? What made you come to us with the? Tell us about your experience with the film Executive Decision.
Speed of the Sky, I like to call it.
Speed of the Sky. I love Speed. I love action movies.
Yeah.
Love 80s and 90s action movies. And I watch them whenever I'm on a plane. And and then I started watching them again when we were all in lockdown last year. Yeah, and I realized that it is like my brain's way of coping.
Yeah. Yes.
I just turn off. I go on autopilot. I enjoy it. You don't have to concentrate too hard. There's explosions. The good guys win. It's good fun.
Well, because there's elements to movies like this that's fantasy. You have to not let yourself, like, because none of this would ever happen.
No, you can't over. And the sleeve wouldn't work for one.
Yeah. Well, that little tiny spaceship that Oliver Platt made for fun would not be a thing. But there is an element of, like, of fantasy to it where you just kind of let yourself believe that these big beefy nerds can do all of this.
Totally. And then I think just Netflix suggested it one day. It was like, and I hadn't seen it until last year, Executive Decision. And I was like, oh yeah, Steven Seagal, Kurt Russell, that could be cool. And then I start watching it. David Suchet pops up. I'm like, my God. Is that David Suchet?
Yeah.
John Leguizamo pops up. I'm like, is that John Leguizamo? I enjoyed it so much that I sent you the message to be like, I want to talk about this movie. I just loved it.
Mm. Yeah.
So would you say, like, we've talked a lot about favourite genres and stuff on this podcast. We all know I love a sexy thriller. We all know that Zach loves some sort of art house shit.
I also like the horrors.
You do love a horror. Would you say action is up there for you?
Absolutely. I reckon my top five favourite movies are all action films.
Ooh,
that's great.
I love them.
There's a lot of I was having a sort of a heated conversation with someone today. He's gone on the record. Broden Kelly loves Godzilla versus Kong. I'm not a fan.
Okay.
I haven't seen it.
I just think action movies now aren't, there's something missing in action movies now. Mm. And watching this movie, I was like, this is great.
Mm.
This is great. And I think it's like a simplicity. There's like, as bombastic and stupid and crazy as it is, this movie is like simple and clear. Yeah. It's like terrorists have plane, got to stop them from doing that.
Yeah, that's right. There's not too much else to it, is there?
No.
I think it's like what Ben Russell was saying when we recorded Ice Age Dawn of the Dinosaurs. No, he made a really good point. He's like, there's, and I don't know how we were talking about action stars, but anything but Ice Age at that point, that there's like the death of the action hero. Do you know what I mean? That's not a thing anymore. And he was saying how Tom Cruise is kind of the last of the really great action stars. And I had to think about it. And it's true and it's really sad. And movies like this, like Zach was saying, it's like it's not complicated.
The Rock, though, I just remembered. The Rock.
Oh, but he's so much more.
But The Rock is a great action star.
Great action hero.
He is this, like, the actor is bigger than the film kind of action star. So The Rock, I think, is the last one.
Okay.
But hopefully there'll be more.
I hope so too.
It's just the style of film. It's just nice. It is simple and it's lovely.
It's the simplicity, I think. It's like, because I was thinking about, I was like, why did I love Fast and the Furious 7, one of my favourite movies of all time, and not love Kong versus Godzilla? Mm. And I think it's like both of them are over the top. Both of them are too long. Both of them are really bombastic. But one has a very clear kind of, it's just easy and simple. The other one has Kong going into an underground world. It's really fucking weird, that movie.
See, you wouldn't recommend it?
Personally, no, but I know people that love it. So, you know, go make your own decision. Make your own executive decision.
But you're very good at this.
What are some of your other
action? I feel like you've done this before.
What are some of your other action movies that you like?
I love, favourite of all time is Terminator 2.
Fuck yeah.
You think that's better than the first Terminator?
Yeah. I think if they'd waited, if they could have made Terminator 1 after Terminator 2, just because the effects and everything just got suddenly so much better and it still holds up, I think that Terminator 1 is an awesome story.
Great.
But I also, Terminator 2 is great.
James Cameron, and I've said this before, I don't know if I think, I can't remember the release order of these, but James Cameron, I think, is the best at sequels. He knows how to add. It's like, yeah, he knows how to take a film and then make the sequel that's like better.
I know we've talked about sequels before, but I don't think I said this. I am of the opinion that there are two sequels that are better than the originals. Please note, I've never seen a Terminator film.
Okay.
Which is awful as someone who enjoys a film. I haven't seen Terminator.
So if you like action movies,
yeah, you would love Terminator.
And I've also not seen The Godfather.
So that's fine.
Yeah.
But Terminator.
I mean, if you want cinema, skip that pish posh. Straight to Terminator.
Is Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I think that the second one is better than the first. Austin Powers.
No, hard. Disagree.
Really?
Disagree.
You think the original is better than the sequel? Yeah. I'm not saying that Goldmember sucks. Goldmember is an awful film. I think that the second Austin Powers is funnier.
Can I ask
than the first.
Which one you watched first?
The second.
There you go. Mark agrees with you. Mark Bonanno. I keep talking about my other comedy thing, but Mark Bonanno agrees with you. But he made the point. It's which one you watch first, because jokes are so similar.
The jokes are over.
Back to the Future. I watched the second one first as well.
But Austin Powers, like, the jokes are the same in the first and the second. So of course the one you watch second is going to be less good.
Yeah.
Because the jokes are exactly the same. They don't surprise you. Mm. But so I could never say. We could never say, because I watched the first one first, so I think the first one's better.
And I watched Goldmember first, and I'm a big fan.
Michael Caine's best work.
Oh, I watched him recently on the weekend, still going through an action movie binge, a Steven Seagal film, the only film that Steven Seagal has ever directed.
Oh, wow.
On Deadly Ground, I think it's called. And Michael Caine is the bad guy in it. I think he's trying to be an American. Still
not
100% sure. He's an oil tycoon, and Steven Seagal is like a guy who puts out oil fires, and he's in charge of that. But it's just about him trying to take down Michael Caine, who's doing all this evil shit and fucking over like the indigenous people there to get the oil. But Steven Seagal literally punches the racism out of a man.
When I was in acting school, one of the, like, books that are held up, like, oh, you know, a great, like, book for actors is Michael Caine wrote, like, a little book which is his advice to actors. It's this little book which is just him giving really, like, you know, there's a lot of wank in acting, but his advice is really kind of concrete and clear. And one of his big, big things is, if you can avoid doing an accent, don't do an accent. And it's this whole thing that, like, you put all of your energy into the accent. You can't just act. And I remember thinking at the time, oh, yeah, that's a good advice. And then every time I see him trying to do an American accent, I'm like, I think that's more just Michael Caine advice. If you're Michael Caine.
Note to him.
Note to Michael Caine. Don't try and do an accent.
Just quickly going back to Steven Seagal, because why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
Here's a little John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you've read the...
Here's a little John Leguizamo fun fact.
Oh,
yes,
this
is Leguizamo-rama. John and Steven hate each other.
Yeah. Was that from this film?
They did one before this.
Really?
And yet worked together again. Hate each other. They got into a famous... I don't know how famous it is, but a very, very notable punch-on set once.
Really?
Yeah, Steven Seagal got really mad at John Leguizamo for ad-libbing. I think I'm getting this story right.
There's a
whole bunch of different articles about it. You can look it up. There are interviews. John Leguizamo has come out and just been like, I hate him. Like, he's a cunt. Like,
and
truthfully.
By all accounts, like, you know, two sides to every story, but obviously we're going to take Legs' side here.
I'm Team Legs.
Team Legs was on.
Team Legs here. But by all accounts, like, there's been other, like, I think Seagal might not be the coolest guy.
I know this might come as a big shock to you guys. Fellas, I don't think he's that nice.
I just remember there was some, I should be careful with the tone here. But, you know, there's been some things that have emerged about Steven Seagal in the last few years. And to not take away from the gravity of those things that have emerged, I've never been more like, yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. That man is a walking Silk Road.
Oh, 100%.
That man is the biggest grub I've ever seen in my life.
Should we talk quickly about John Leguizamo in this movie?
Did he beat up Steven Seagal in real life?
I heard that John Leguizamo kept ad-libbing. Steven Seagal got really mad and started yelling at him. Then John started laughing at Steven for yelling.
On your legsy.
And then Steven, and then and so and he kept being like, "Do it like the script says." And then the director would call action, and John Leguizamo, just to fuck with Steven Seagal, would keep ad-libbing and keep doing shit. Then Steven Seagal got really mad, started screaming. John Leguizamo started laughing at him, and then Steven punched him in the head.
Whoa.
Yeah. I've heard that too.
That I might be, like, there might be other, I have a feeling there's probably more intricacy to that story than what I just said. But, yeah. I think he was really good in this movie. It's a lot of fun.
Great. I thought he was really good.
Legs or Seagal?
Legs.
Yeah, Legs. Yeah. He had all the good lines.
He had all the good. And I thought, like, because he often played, I was really expecting, oh, he's going to be, I thought he was going to be an early death.
Yeah.
And then he really, like, is in it heaps.
Well, when they started climbing up the spaceship sleeve and it was very obvious, okay, people are going to die, I was like, well, John's going to be one of them. Like,
yeah.
But John got up there quick. He was in the whole film from beginning to end, literally from the first scene to the last. John, when we love that, because he dies so much.
And he survived. And when Seagal died, Leguizamo took over and he was the leader.
He was the Seagal.
He was the guy.
Yeah.
He was the guy. What a great moment for me as a John Leguizamo fan to be like, all right, second in command to Steven Seagal. We're going to hardly get anything. And then Steven Seagal dies. You're meant to be upset, but I'm like, wait a second. Who's in charge now?
Yeah. And also,
what does this mean for Legs?
Oh, my God. This is bad for Seagal, but this is great for Legs.
Also, can I just say, we've seen the Legs in action films. We've seen him in comedies, we've seen him in dramas. We've never seen him play an action character.
Yeah.
This is the first time we've ever. I'm so happy. So,
and he was great. And I thought, honestly, the coolest moment in the movie was when they hear a commotion downstairs and they send the pilot down to check out what's going on. And he flashes his torch. First sees Kurt Russell, who says, look over there. And then he shines the torch on John Leguizamo, who rips up a Velcro patch to show an American flag to be like, I'm a good guy. But the way he rips up, so cool.
Yeah, it's
such a great moment of like,
so cool.
How's he going to communicate that he's a
exactly.
good guy?
You might be like, oh, another terrorist.
But he's like, nah, man. I got the American.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a scene where he has to like.
Yeah, it's so cool.
It's so good.
There's a scene where they like have to crawl through this top of the plane. And if they drop, they'll fall through because apparently the ceiling of a plane is made of paper.
Like you can just punch a hole and suddenly you're in the roof cavity.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, whatever you do, don't touch the ground because you'll fall right through and you'll fall right through to the cabin. It's like the roof of a plane is not made.
Do cabins have like. Attics?
I'd never thought about
it. They keep old photo albums and stuff.
But when it came up, I was like, oh, that's what the top of a plane looks like. Mm. Not until this moment, remembering, oh, this is a Hollywood movie. They could make it anything up there.
John had to crawl across a wire.
Yeah.
And he taught Kurt Russell how to do it. And Kurt Russell was not very good, but John was like, oh, it's all right. Oh, it was good. John was better than Kurt Russell.
It's all right, you big nerd.
Yeah,
you big old nerd.
I'm a cool military man and you're a
simple counter-terrorism expert. Oh.
Well, luckily for everyone, this movie is really good and clearly we would have made you want to watch it. It is on Netflix in Australia, I'm assuming.
Which I forgot and I bought it on YouTube.
Oh, no. Oh, that sucks.
Was it a rental or do you own that movie?
No, I rented it. I own Waco, starring John Leguizamo, because I couldn't rent it at the time. But no, I just rented it.
How good was Waco, though?
Waco was great. How good's John Leguizamo?
We love John Leguizamo.
Honestly, he was great in this movie. I loved watching him, and you're right. It was good because you had so much face time with him.
Yeah. And peak sexy Luigi phase.
Oh, so, like, for anyone who's decided to jump on...
For you.
Yeah, of course. But anyone who's decided to jump on board our podcast for some reason now, that we've discovered in our study of the legs that there are different phases of the legs.
Okay.
We have baby legs.
Baby legs.
And baby legs is like early night. He was in Miami Vice. He's a child.
He's a young actor.
Up and comer.
Just started out. Done a couple of Meisner classes in New York. His teeth are too big for his face and he exclusively wears giant suit jackets.
Giant blazers. They're
giant
huge.
Blazers. Always too big for him. And he doesn't, he's not that attractive. He's kind of.
No, he looks like he's growing into himself. But then all of a sudden there's a certain point where he got really hot.
But somewhere between 92 and 95. No, 93, because Louis.
Yeah.
Mario, so it's between 90. No, it's between 80 something and 93.
No, because Miami Vice was 1990. but then Whispers in the Dark, full sex, and that's 1992. And then Luigi's 1993.
So we reckon around 91.
And this is sexy Luigi.
He took a few months off to go into a cocoon and emerge.
Right. Do you think he grew into his teeth somehow or something?
He grew into his teeth.
Zero body fat.
He grew into looking good.
Yeah, schmick.
That's the sexy Luigi phase.
But then while he was sexy Luigi, naturally he started picking up more roles in Hollywood, started working with Baz Luhrmann. Still sexy Luigi, but now we're looking at a little bit more like Leguizolliwood.
Leguizolliwood is a sub-phase of sexy Luigi.
Okay.
Because it's still the same kind of cute, sexy, twinkish charm, but he's got a personal trainer now. Mm. He's got a stylist. He's got, like, skincare. He's elevating sexy Luigi to a Hollywood level of perfection.
And then
we're talking Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, late 90s. But then somewhere in the mid-noughties, we don't really know where, he became a dad. And he's Dad Guizamo through and through. But he also did Land of the Dead in 2005. And that's Daddy Guizamo, because damn.
He put those two ears together.
Yeah.
So he had a Daddy Guizamo phase, it's which is ombre. The transitionary phase between Leguizolliwood and Dad Guizamo is Daddy Guizamo. We don't consider that an official phase. If you look at the Leguizamo guidebook, you're going to see baby legs, you're going to see sexy Luigi, you're going to see Dad Guizamo. But what really happened is sexy Luigi has two phases. It's the sexy Luigi phase and it's the Leguizolliwood phase. Between sexy Luigi, between Leguizolliwood and Dad Guizamo was the Daddy Guizamo phase. Now, we don't really know how long Daddy Guizamo went for.
But we'll find out.
We don't really know when Dad Guizamo starts, but we do know that Dad Guizamo is by far his longest phase. It happened somewhere in the mid-noughties and it's still happening to this day.
Yeah.
So that's, what, over 16, 17 years now of Dad Guizamo. The other phases were much shorter. I mean,
and who knows what phases we'll come to. Like, there's so many. The man doesn't stop working.
The next phase what is the next phase? I couldn't say.
That's a question for him when we have one day, when we break down for him.
So you were real hot, then you were hot but a bit older. Now you're old, but what's the next phase? But hot all the way through. Legs, if you're listening, Dad Guizamo, I'm sure, has its fans.
All we're trying to say is that you picked a sexy Luigi film and we appreciate it.
Oh, no worries. I was happy to see that. Peak Leguizamo face.
So what we do at this point is our Leguistamos.
Yes!
So,
yes.
Just to reiterate, this isn't a star rating for the film. No. This is how Leguizamo-y the film was.
Oh, fantastic.
So, it's purely on the Leguizamo factor.
Yeah. So let's say, hypothetically, Steven Seagal's role and John Leguizamo's roles were swapped. I don't think that this would, if that was the case, this is not a five Leguizamo film.
Yep.
But they aren't swapped.
No.
They are the way they are. Zach, do you want to launch out with your Leguizamo?
Wow. Okay. But I think I don't want to. I feel like you want to give it a five.
I'm not saying anything. I know exactly what I'm going to give it. Do you want me to write it down?
No. I'll give it mine. I'm going to give it 4.5.
That's exactly what I'm giving it to.
I'm giving it 4.5 Leguizamos. I think Legs did a fantastic job. I think he's in it heaps. He dies. No, he doesn't die.
He doesn't die.
He gets shot but survives, and it's right at the end.
Badass.
Yeah.
It's badass. It's awesome. The only thing that is stopping it from being a five-star film is that he's not in Kurt Russell's role.
Yeah.
And I love Kurt Russell, so I'm not saying that it should be. I'm very happy with this film being a 4.5 Leguizamo. I don't begrudge this film for having Kurt Russell because he does great. Kurt Russell's great. Seagal's great. Halle Berry's great. The guy from Terminator 2's great. Oliver Platt's great. This film is a fantastic film, and it's 4.5 Leguizamos.
Can I just say, this was my thinking. When he got shot at the end of the film and he died, but he didn't die, I was like, okay, well, it's a 4.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it was a four Leguistamo film.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a, I have no idea about what Rat, that's his character's name, went home to do after.
Yeah.
No backstory. I have no idea what his life is. All he was witty quips.
Yeah.
Was in it from start to finish, appreciate that, and fuck, he was good. So that was four. But when he killed the bad guy.
He gets up and then he shoots David Suchet. Yeah.
I felt conflicted
about that.
Oh, right.
Because he's a very bad man. And I thought he played that role well for David Suchet, but also.
That would be, yeah.
Watching David Suchet die.
That would be like if someone shot John Leguizamo in a movie.
If Poirot shot John Leguizamo.
Yeah, if John Leguizamo was the bad guy in a Poirot film and Poirot shot John Leguizamo, I'd be like, oh, mixed feelings because I love John Leguizamo.
Yeah, of course, yeah. That's why I give it 4.5 because he shot him in the end. But it's not a five. It's not five, but my God, it's a solid 4.5.
Has anything got five yet?
Yeah.
Couple, yeah.
Couple. So if it's a unanimous five, Leguizamo's, that's when the film is a Leguizamo-rama.
Oh, fantastic.
But mind you, that sounds really clever, but we only came up with that. I think Jess Perkins' episode.
Yeah, so the idea is, when it's five Leguizamos, it becomes, that's an official Leguizamo-rama. And we don't have many of them, do we?
There's only a handful. There's Land of the Dead.
Yeah.
There's, oh shit, what else have we done? Help. Latin History for Morons.
I was going to say his like sort of stand up show.
One man shows are clearly.
That's probably the only time you're going to see him from start to finish. Unless
and he like writes it.
A one man.
Yeah.
Like if he's locked in like a telephone box or something for an hour or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, when he plays Captain Vegetable in an episode of Sesame Street.
No, that wasn't. I gave that 4.5. You gave that 5.
Oh, so it wasn't a
Leguizamo.
That breaks my heart that wasn't a Leguizamo-rama.
What would you give this? How many Leguizamos?
Now I've got that context. I was thinking, what could be a five then? Now I know that like his Latin history show, that is a five. I would give it also 4.5 stars.
That's beautiful,
Leguizamos. Leguizamos. Thank you. Don't want to
if he was in Kurt Russell's role, it would be a five.
100%.
But I'm not saying that because I love Kurt Russell. This made me go, fuck, I want to go watch some Kurt Russell films.
It made me want to go and watch more Goldie Hawn films. His life partner, Goldie Hawn, who I'm a big fan of.
Love Goldie Hawn.
Love Goldie Hawn. We should put her on our list of people we should watch more movies of.
Oh, yeah. But them together. What a
beautiful.
What a pair.
Have you seen Overboard?
Nah.
Yeah, good times, that film.
I love Kurt Russell. I love Goldie Hawn. They're not married either.
No, they've been together like for like 100 years.
And someone was like, why didn't you get married? And he was like, if it ain't broke, why fix it? And I'm like, you're so cool.
Good answer. Yeah.
You're so cool.
Okay. Cool.
Thank you so much for joining us on Leguizamo-rama.
It was one of the greatest privileges of my life. So thank you so much.
And thank you for having us on Book Cheats.
Yeah, great. Obviously, people can check that out now. We talked about Camus' The Outsider / The Stranger.
La Tranchia.
Oh, my God.
Get ready for me getting out the full wank fest. Oh, boy. I'm now going to quickly pull up some reviews of our podcast.
While we're doing that, Dave, how can people find you?
Oh, they can follow my podcast probably is the best way.
Yeah.
So Book Cheat that you guys have been on now 3 times, I think, and a bunch of other classic books and plays I've covered on there. And the other one is Do Go On, which Zach has been on to nerd out about the Disneyland car park. But we take it in terms of report on a topic and there's nearly 300 episodes. There's something for everyone, a topic probably.
Did you all get together after that episode like for a meeting?
Oh, it was so much fun. We laughed so much on that episode.
It's the bread tour. So I think the thing is, I didn't convey it well, but it's about Disney's California Adventure, and which is the Disneyland site. And it's a shame the intro went for 70 minutes because at the end of that, I say that one of the attractions was a bread tour where you get a tour of a bakery and you get to watch the bakers. And the hosts of the tour on video are Rosie O'Donnell and Colin Mochrie.
Oh, my God. Fuck.
And it's still there. It's the best part is because it's still there. So they've got like now all these amazing rides. They've got Soarin'. They've got you can go be Spider-Man. You can go and
join the Guardians of the Galaxy, or you can turn left and go into the bread tour.
I'd do the bread tour of Rosie and Colin. Oh,
they give you a free slice of sourdough and you munch it on your sourdough while Colin Mochrie and Rosie O'Donnell circa 2000 are like, sourdough has a long history in California. Some say it was the miners using old bread dough to make bread.
That oh, my God. If that isn't reason enough to go and listen to do go on, I don't know what is.
Or reason to hopefully open the borders here so we can get over there. I'm going to go on this tour.
Oh, 100%.
You got to do it.
Oh.
Yeah, let's do our part, get jabbed so we can go yeah, on the bread tour. I'm going to read a couple of reviews very quickly. We only read 5-star reviews. If a fan has legitimate criticism our podcast, we'll only take that criticism if it's in the form of a 5-star review.
That's a great system.
So yeah, it's worked well so far.
If we ever start a Patreon, you can also pay us $10 to give your criticism. from D. Garner, why? I wasn't sure if I needed this pod in my ears, and I don't. But please don't stop. Thank you. Yeah, oh, that's nice.
5 stars?
Five stars, yes. We don't read the reviews, so I could be about to say something really offensive. Who knows? This is from chess_cowboy27. 10 out of 10 leguistamos. Thank you so much. It's out of 5, but okay. Yeah. I knew about legs before listening to this pod, but through the power of Mission Zach, I am now a huge fan. This is one of my fave pods. I was listening to it when I was around my mum and she made me stop listening because I was laughing too much and excluding people. Oh, that's the most mum thing I've ever heard in my life. I love hearing you guys chat and talk about movies and I'm very excited for you guys to review Moulin Rouge especially. Please thirst over Ewan McGregor as well because that will make me very happy. Every week is a true adventure getting to know a new sexy 90s thriller with sexy legs and I enjoy it very much. Both of you are awesome pod hosts. I would listen to you talk about anything, smiley face. P.S., when you talked about getting a reply from the legs on Instagram, it reminded me of when Zach once replied to my friend's comment on Instagram and we both freaked out.
Well, oh, Chess, thank you, Chess.
Thank you, Chess, and good to know that it's worth getting in the comments and doing the occasional reply.
Thank you so much, Chess. Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you.
Everyone go and watch this movie. It was
fucking
great.
And, of course, thank you, John Leguizamo.
Thank you, John.
What a guy.
Oh, I wasn't recording.
Oh, you...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.